I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. As you certainly know by now, President Barack Obama delivered his first State of the Union address last night, and we will bring you a range of reactions to the speech. We'll talk to a panel of our regular contributors for analysis. We'll hear from one woman whose family has been deeply affected by the recession for her take on how Mr. Obama's plan to create jobs sounds to her. And we'll hear the very personal reaction of one man, a military man, who's affected by Mr. Obama's promise to work to repeal the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. But we'll start with syndicated columnist and regular Tell Me More contributor Ruben Navarrete, senior political analyst for BET, Black Entertainment Television, Pam Gentry, and Democratic strategist and deputy campaign manager for the Obama campaign, Steve Hildebrand. They're all here with us. Welcome to you all. Thank you. Welcome back, I should say.
It's a pleasure.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Let me start with you, Pam. The president received a loud and enthusiastic reception from his Democratic colleagues, but as we've all talked about, that many of these colleagues have not been showing him a lot of love on many of his policy priorities lately. And here's a clip of the president chiding both parties for being intransigent. Here it is.
To Democrats, I would remind you that we still have the largest majority in decades, and the people expect us to solve problems, not run for the hills. And if the Republican leadership is going to insist that 60 votes in the Senate are required to do any business at all in this town, a supermajority, then the responsibility to govern is now yours as well. Just saying no to everything may be good short-term politics, but it's not leadership. We were sent here to serve our citizens, not our ambitions.
So, Pam, how do you interpret this statement, particularly putting it in the context of the larger speech? What was the president trying to say?
I think he was not blame-shifting as much as he was saying that we're both responsible for doing the job that we were sent here to do. But it does put some it does put the Republicans in a defensive situation now. I've heard interviews already this morning where they're coming out saying, we're not just saying no, we're just saying no to this particular, you know, part of his plan or part of this. And we're trying to work with him. We're not. And that's a different tone. I haven't quite heard that tone before. But I don't think some Democrats liked it. In particular, I got a couple of emails very quickly that, you know, they don't already agree. They're upset with him for talking about a freeze.
So a spending freeze.
A spending freeze. So even though he was chiding all of them last night, I don't think that he probably made hay with any of them.
Really? Steve Hildebrand, what do you think?
Well, I think, you know, the number 60 in the Senate, the partisanship, all of that needs to be reduced. And it's, you know, the onus is on the president and the members of the House and Senate to do that. These people were sent there to solve problems. And if they don't start solving the problems, our country's going to be even worse off than it already is. This is not about Democrats or Republicans. It's about showing leadership. The president said that. But the American people need to start demanding it in a much more serious way.
I want to hear more from you about what you think that means, but I'm going to hear from Ruben first. Ruben, your sense of the speech, what's your sense of the overall tone?
Right.
What was the president trying to accomplish? Did he do what he set out
right.
to do?
I think he did. The overall tone was defiant. It was, listen, notwithstanding my party's defeats in Virginia, New Jersey, and Massachusetts, I do not give up. I will not give up on this agenda. I think that obviously after the Massachusetts election, the big question was whether or not Obama would hedge his bets, pull back on some of his agenda items, including health care reform, or whether he would double down. And you were actually getting signals up from the White House in both regards. There were mixed messages coming out about going either way. And you could really make the case, even if you're a supporter of Barack Obama, that you could go either way, that there was wisdom in either way. And he actually doubled down. He actually just came out, doubled down, and said, listen, you know, I want you to get back to work. We're going to solve these problems. Sort of accentuating what he had said last week in an interview about how he would be okay with being a one-term president. He wasn't going to walk away from some of these problems. So overall, I may disagree with the president on a lot of what he said last night in terms of policy, cap and trade, healthcare reform, other things. But I was very impressed by his tone. I like it when a president in either party just doubles down and says, you know what, I'm not going to back down. I'm not going to change my view on this. If you don't like it, vote me out.
And let's talk about the key priority that the president identified early in the speech, the whole question of the economy and particularly job creation. Steve, I'm going to go to you first, but first I'm going to play a short clip of the president addressing this whole question of where he thinks Americans are and how they are feeling right now. Here it is.
From the day I took office, I've been told that addressing our larger challenges is too ambitious. Such an effort would be too contentious. I've been told that our political system is too gridlocked and that we should just put things on hold for a while. For those who make these claims, I have one simple question. How long should we wait? How long should America put its future on hold?
Steve, what do you think about that? I mean, we're going to drill down a little later in the program on some of the sort of the policy initiatives that he suggested per se. But do you think that the president did a good job of sort of telling the American people that he understands the problem and that he has a plan?
I do. I think it's long overdue that Washington gets some of these problems addressed. There is no time to waste. You know, people are still getting laid off. People are still feeling very uncertain with their lives, with their health care, with their jobs, you know, worried about whether or not they can pay their home heating bills in winters like this. There's a lot of big concerns that regular people have, and, you know, the president's right. There is no time to waste, and these folks need to get to work and really solve some problems.
But, you know, Steve, one of the things that I'm interested in your perspective on is that a lot of the conservative and Republican commentators and lawmakers in recent days have been saying that the president misread his mandate and that he is overreaching in policy and ideology because most of the public, or at least half of the public, or at least a good consensus of the public, just doesn't agree with him. Are you surprised, Steve, that at this point, given the concerns that the country has, that the president even has to make a speech like that? Because he seems to be making the case that you have to solve problems. I thought that was a settled issue, and a lot of people are saying it's not.
I think that, Michelle, one of the mistakes that I think this president has made, this administration has made, is that they didn't do a good enough job of selling their health care plan. They didn't do a good enough job of selling the stimulus plan to the American people. I think that large majorities of voters in this country believe in the president's health care reform agenda, but they don't know enough details about it. And so it confuses them. It scares them. People are always nervous around change, and this president's got a great ability to communicate to the American people. And if he would spend more time selling what he is proposing, I'm thoroughly convinced he would have the strong backing of the American people to do so, and that Congress would be put in a much more difficult position to actually solve the healthcare crisis. I think the same with jobs. I think the same with, you know, the overall economy, why we had to do the bank bailout, you know, those kinds of things. I just don't think I think they've been in such a hurry to try and solve problems and deal with, you know, the nightmare that has existed in this country that they haven't had the time and taken the time to go out and sell the American people on what they're actually trying to do.
If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. We're talking about the president's State of the Union, his first State of the Union address. Joining us are Democratic strategist Steve Hildebrand, journalist Pam Gentry, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete. Pam, what about the president's answer to this argument that you're doing too much? Do you think it was persuasive?
I think near the end of his speech, he went into this his discussion about why I ran for office. I said I was going to make changes. I didn't say I could do all of these changes by myself. I need, you know, I need cooperation. I need, you know, the American people to understand. And I think he made a persuasive argument about the policies that he's been most passionate about. But I don't think that he's maybe has been consistent the entire time so that the American people were growing along with him. But I do think that last night he stepped up to the plate to say, he admitted, I take full responsibility for some of the things that I may have not done or explained to you effectively. But I'm making amends in a sense.
Do you find it odd that health care came up so late in the speech?
No, I don't, because I knew that jobs was going to be number one. I mean, all week at the White House press briefings, it was very clear that they were refocusing their direction in the State of the Union. This was going to be jobs, jobs, jobs.
And Ruben, finally, before we take a break, I just want to play one more clip from the president's speech. He was several times in the speech critical of the Washington establishment, as you often are. And I just want to play a short clip of what the president had to say.
We have to recognize that we face more than a deficit of dollars right now. We face a deficit of trust, deep and corrosive doubts about how Washington works that have been growing for years. To close that credibility gap, we have to take action on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue. To end the outsized influence of lobbyists, to do our work openly, to give our people the government they deserve.
Now, Ruben, I know that you share the president's view of the illness, but do you buy the cure?
I do not. I think this was probably the weakest part of his speech. He's least believable when he starts railing against Washington as if he just sort of landed here from Illinois yesterday. He is as much a creature of Washington at this point as anyone else, even though he was in the Senate for a very short time. Him challenging the establishment is not something he does effectively because, you know, whether he's mocking somebody for driving a pickup truck or whatever, he always comes off as part of the establishment that he's mocking. I do think that we're misreading a lot of what we're seeing with Obama. I don't think it's a question of him trying to do too much. It's a question of the stuff that he's trying to do a lot of Americans just don't like. And he thinks because he gets out every once in a while and visits a factory in Allentown or something, if there are factories left in Allentown, God forbid, that I think that there are real questions about whether or not he and his advisors in the White House are really as tone deaf as they seem, because the messages from outside the Beltway don't seem to be permeating the White House.
And Steve, I'm going to hear from you just briefly before we have to take a short break. What's your reaction to that? Ruben says it's not that he's doing too much, it's what he's trying to do. What do you say?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that President Obama has offered and implemented more reforms in government than any president has in the last 30 years. There is a record there, and I think it should be recognized because it is an accomplishment for his administration in the first year, and it's a promise that he made to the American people. Has it been enough? I don't think so. But I also think Congress needs to reform itself. The Supreme Court just came out with this ruling that said corporations and the wealthy can spend unlimited amounts of money for or against a candidate for federal office. Well, that's pretty scary, and Congress has to deal with that. We need campaign finance reform in a serious way. The American people need to have representation, not just corporations.
Steve, we need to take a short break, but we'll come right back to you when we come back. Our panel, analyzing the president's State of the Union address, Steve Hildebrand, Pam Gentry, Ruben Navarrete. I'm Michelle Martin. You're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Please stay with us. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Coming up, what does last night's presidential address mean for your wallet? We'll speak with our regular contributor, Alvin Hall, about the president's proposals to help the struggling middle class. We'll ask how all that sounds to a woman whose family has been hit hard by the recession. That's in just a few minutes. But first, we want to continue our conversation about last night's address with our group of panelists. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist and regular Tell Me More contributor. Pam Gentry is the senior political analyst for BET, Black Entertainment Television. And Steve Hildebrand is a Democratic strategist and former deputy campaign manager of the Obama presidential campaign. Pam, I just want to play a short clip of Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. He was just sworn in. He's one of the GOP's big successes in this last election cycle. He was selected to give the Republican response. Here's what he had to say.
Many Americans are concerned about this administration's effort to exert greater control over car companies, banks, energy, and health care. But overregulating employers won't create more employment. Overtaxing investors won't foster more investment. Top-down, one-size-fits-all decision-making should not replace the personal choices of free people in a free market, nor undermine the proper role of state and local governments in our system of federalism.
Steve, I'm going to ask you to put your strategist hat on for us and tell me, what was Bob McDonnell trying to accomplish with his speech, and do you think he accomplished it?
Well, it's going back to the same old Republican line that we've been hearing for decades, which is basically, government regulation is not good public policy, that overspending is not good public policy, the Democrats are tax and spend liberals. You know, I think it's pretty critically important to take these issues on in a little bit more serious way than the governor did. You know, give us an alternative to bailing out the banks and saving the financial institutions in this country. We would have been in a disaster if we not had done that. It was important to do. It wasn't pleasant for anybody to do or accept, but it had to be done. The car companies the same way. I'm all about bipartisanship, but the Republicans need to start offering some solutions.
Ruben, what about you? What's your reaction? What do you think Bob McDonnell was trying to accomplish, and do you think he succeeded? And I do want to mention, I think we all agree that the optics, as it were right. a lot better than they were last year, and
you
Bobby
betcha.
Jindal was kind of, I don't know, looking like
a great
human,
American, you betcha.
Like a human dartboard, and absolutely. I think the idea of giving the speech in a room full of people and getting the
right.
same benefit of the
mm-hmm.
of the audience reaction that the president
sure.
gets, I think, clearly, from an atmospheric standpoint, was more successful. Ruben, your reaction?
Well, the play with his sons, the 18-year-old twin sons in front row, and him saying, "I've got to wrap up in 10 minutes so they can go watch SportsCenter." You know, he's likable. It was nicely done in that regard. And you stole my thunder, Michelle. He was trying to say, "I am not Bobby Jindal. I am not the Louisiana governor who came up here and flubbed this, and almost torpedoed, or maybe did torpedo, his long-term presidential ambitions through a bad speech." He tried to bring home sort of what you would expect governors to say. They always talk about the role. Of course, governors are going to talk about the role of state governments and stress local control and all of that against federal mandates. But, you know, I thought it was a weak speech in the sense that he's talking about generalities and using sound bites. And again, it doesn't really get to the bigger questions. If you're in favor of local control, you're against No Child Left Behind or Arne Duncan's version, Race to the Top. But how do you go to the next step? How do you improve student performance if you're in favor of local control? So God bless the governors. It's great that we have 50 of them, but, you know, they serve their role, and there's a reason why they don't go to Washington to become president as often as all that.
Pam Gentry, brief thought from you before we wrap up.
I just basically, Virginia obviously is the state of responses. And my only problem with this last one is that he was just too new. 11-day, you know, he's only been in office a very short time. He hasn't done a Virginia budget yet. So I don't know how much, you know, I don't know what experience he stood up on to even give that speech. So, again, a weak speech, but I don't think it.
He won a purple state.
That's fine. That's fine. I can see where that works, but I don't see, again, in comparison to Bobby Jindal last year, I think that, you know, he probably hit it out of the ballpark, but I just don't see where it was substantive enough to make a difference.
It was a nice touch, though, highlighting also his daughter who just returned from service in Iraq. I think that was also a nice touch. Oh, final thought I wanted to ask, Pam, I'm going to start with you. Where does the president go from here? You know, you've talked about the fact that he was trying to address a number of deficiencies that people had identified in his performance over the course of the year, sort of jumping from issue to issue or taking on too much and trying to give sort of some coherence to that. And also, as Ruben pointed out, make the case and say that he's not withdrawing on his priorities. What do you think he does from here?
Well, I think he sticks to those priorities and doesn't lose focus, which, are, you know, he said it's been health care, it's going to be jobs, it's going to be energy. I mean, he stays on script. But I think more importantly, and he also now has to make sure that he can round up his Democratic colleagues and get them all on one page. And then he can start that last but most difficult task is trying to woo some bipartisan support. But he's got to get the Democrats all on board.
Steve Hildebrand, you're a Democratic strategist. Where does the president go from here? He literally goes to Tampa, Florida. That's where he physically goes today. Where does he go from here to sort of consolidate whatever successes he had last night?
Well, I think the stronger leadership that he provides, the greater chance he's going to have of Democratic members of the House and Senate getting behind his proposals in a more uniform way. I also believe that he needs to exert a lot of pressure on Republicans to step up to the plate and either support his agenda or offer real compromise, something that doesn't torpedo the agenda but actually solves some problems. And I think if he does get out there and plays a much stronger offensive role, he will be in a great position to get things done.
And Ruben, I'm going to give you the final word. I'm going to ask you to say, where do the Republicans and Democrats and the president go from
right.
here, since you're
right.
kind of an out loud and proud independent?
Right.
So what I'm asking you to assess on both sides, which they should
right.
be doing.
Yeah, Michelle, independence is a nice way of saying you tick off everybody in one soundbite. I think the
true.
Yeah, I think the Democrats, I think that Obama, for instance, President Obama has to reach out to Republicans on various issues. If you were paying attention, you see Democrats roll their eyes and sat on their hands when he talked about expanding trade deals because labor doesn't like that, about improving education because teachers' unions don't like that, cutting spending, as was mentioned before, because, you know, a lot of Democrats don't like that. So he's going to lose, and he has lost a lot of support among his own party. It means he has to go out and reach out to Republicans more often. Issues like immigration allow him to do that because he's going to get Republican support. People like Lindsey Graham and others are Republicans willing to take that on, work with the president. So those are good opportunities for him. The Republicans, on the other hand, really have to get beyond, you know, this notion somehow that they're opposed to everything. What are you in favor of? Explain what you're in favor of. Work with the president work with members of Congress. Maybe there's a middle ground there. They have ideas for health care reform, for immigration reform. They happen just to be different ideas. You know, they recognize the problems. They have different ideas about how to solve them. So there needs to be a lot more, I think, reaching across the aisle. And I think that's the tone that needs to be set. It was set last night. Hopefully Congress will follow through.
Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist and regular Tell Me More contributor. You can hear him on Fridays in our Barbershop segment. He joined us from KOGO in San Diego. Pamela Gentry is the senior political analyst for BET, Black Entertainment Television. She was kind enough to drop by our Washington, D.C. studios. And Steve Hildebrand is a Democratic strategist and deputy campaign manager for the Obama campaign. He was kind enough to join us from South Dakota Public Radio in Sioux Falls. I thank you all so much for speaking with us.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you.